Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks for tuning in and welcome to The Unknown Show. I'm your host, Bud Smith. We moved this show from Tuesday because I was at a Nutrimilk Hotel concert in Jersey City where I got married. And we're going to carry over with the same guests that were supposed to come on Tuesday night. Except Ray Bryant, the author and publisher of Dr. Eckelberg Review. She had to bow out tonight. Look for her on a future show. We're going to reschedule with her. But tonight on the show, we're going to talk to Michael Maxwell. He's a writer, artist, editor at JMWW. Really funny motherfucker. He's coming on, and we're going to talk to him in a little bit. And then later on in the show, we're going to talk to Ryder Collins. She's the author of the novel Homegirl, which is, I highly recommend that. You ought to check that out. We're going to talk to her about the book and some other things that she has going on, because she's the kind of person that has a lot going on. But first, before we shut this noise off, that noise actually is courtesy of Brendan Kastner, Bootsy Spankin's PI. He's a really great dude, great music. Check him out, Bootsy Spankin's PI. So, yeah, this Saturday I'm going down to New Jersey. I always seem to be down in New Jersey. It's going to be a dual book release party that's happening with Piscataway House Press. So the great guys that put out Tollbooth, my novel Tollbooth, and going down there to see Mark Brunetti, publisher of Piscataway House and the Idiom magazine, and his brother Keith Baird, who put out a split poetry book with Andrew Inkfaint. They did some great editing work on Tollbooth. Good dudes. So I don't know what are the chances that people are listening right now from the Jersey Shore area, but if you're in the area, swing on by Revolutionary Lounge and hang out with me. I'm bringing some beer with me. What else is new, right? And that's all I really got right now. I want to pull the first guest on. This is going to be Michael Gillen Maxwell, and I gotta say, I've had a few conversations on the phone with this guy before, and he always cracks me up. And I'm gonna pull him on. Hey, Mike, you there?
I'm right here.
What are you doing?
I'm having a beer and listening to you on speaker. Can I speak on speaker? Is that all right?
Oh, dude, you can do whatever you want, man. It's, you know, it's free country. We fought wars.
I mean, in terms of the audio, it's cool.
Oh, dude, nobody's listening. It doesn't matter. You know, actually, I think the audio probably sounds fantastic because, you know, I always assume everything's fantastic. Today, I pulled into a gas station, and I asked the guy to fill up my tank, and he leaned in the window, and he says, you know, you're driving with a completely flat tire.
My God.
Yeah, who knows how fucking far I was driving with that flat tire. It was at least 5 miles from the oil refinery where I had just finished my shift. So rock on, man. Everything with me is always good, apparently, even when I'm, you know, cruising down the road with flat tire.
Yeah, the guardian angel watching out for you.
Yeah. So I'm happy to talk to you here on the show. I know, me and you are haunting the halls at JMWW, doing some editing, flash fiction editing there with Mr. Robert Vaughn. And,
that's correct.
I get a kick out of that. I really do. JMWW gets some really, really great. They get some really cool writing, you know. It's always.
Well, actually, I was just listening to your show on your archive show with Chuck Howe, Mick Everett, and Robert and Sam Snook Brown today, and I think it was Chuck who said. But you guys were talking about learning to write from, you know, how much you can learn about writing from editing, from reading submissions, and I completely agree with that. It's really an important learning experience.
It really is for me. I mean, I'll tell you what. I just go back and look at things that I used to thought, you know, I wrote were okay. You know, I was happy with them. And I look back at them now, and not so much I don't mind the ideas, but just the fundamentals, you know, of it, the building blocks of it. I'm like, wow, I can totally see why how this could be better, because I've read so many other submissions by other people in similar formats.
Yeah.
So, you know, it definitely gives me a more of a feel for it, you know.
Totally. I mean, there are artists, and maybe Picasso is one of the most famous examples of this, who, when they were mature artists, they wanted to buy back their earliest work from their patrons because they were embarrassed by it.
Yeah. I'm not far enough along where I'm embarrassed of my early stuff yet, but I guess it's coming. You know, that's probably inevitable for everybody.
Yeah. Actually, I think I owe some, some gratitude to people who have rejected me as I looked at work I'd sent out and it was rejected, and I look at it now and go, holy shit, I'm glad that was rejected.
Yeah, well, you know, especially like sending stuff out for, you know, internet websites and stuff, I just figure, you know, it's this big digital graveyard, you know? I mean, it's always there.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like a ghost in purgatory. It's always there, but nobody really is really noticing, you know? Your old work is there. It's looming over you, floating above you as you sleep or whatever. But
funny stuff. Yeah. I cleaned out my garage this summer and I filled up a 20-yard dumpster. So you work in construction, you know how much shit that a 20-yard dumpster will hold. That was a lot of crap. But one of the things I recovered at the end of that process, and I was totally surprised by it, was a copy of Scribbles magazine, which was the Whitefish Bay High School literary magazine in Milwaukee. And I was I was in a 11th grader going into 12th grade, and I submitted these two, you know, teenage angst-ridden poems that got in there, and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even know I had that. So that was a blast from the past, reading that stuff, and that was just in print. So now, I mean, yeah, things on the internet sort of live forever, so to speak.
Yeah, they live forever. Just the other day, there was a post, actually speaking of JMWW, that I saw editor, founder, Jen Mikowski had a Facebook thing up where it was somebody had sent her a request to pull an old accepted story from JMW's website, which is like, it's not an exclusive thing, obviously, for JMWW. All these literary websites, eventually you get somebody, maybe probably even once a year, who's like, I need to pull this story. They're embarrassed of it. Maybe it's even affecting their, you know, career. Maybe they're trying to run for the mayor of their little shitty town. Good for them. I'm lucky. I work with some cool people, man. I work with some great guys, you know. And I'm in a construction union. There's nothing I can do to tarnish my name. I literally could fucking shoot somebody, go to prison for a few years, and as long as I'm paying my dues when I come out, I'll have a job.
I was in three different construction unions myself.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, you know, I'm not saying...
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, how do you feel, have you gotten to the point where you've literally had something on a lit site where you're looking back on it, and you thought about contacting any editors?
I don't think it'll ever get to that degree. I've taken stuff off my own website, of course, but pulled stuff off of Facebook. Not surprising.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm in a different frame of mind when I'm posting on Facebook at 2 a.m. than when I'm submitting work.
I think...
When I send stuff out, I'm like committed to it.
It's done. Once you push send, it's done, huh?
It's fast. So I just got off the phone with Meg Tewitt about 2 minutes before I called in, and she said that she wished she could, you know, be available to call in tonight to give us some grief, but she couldn't get her phone.
You know what? The thing with Meg too, it is, I've gotten a few letters of complaint about her. You know, people writing in.
No way.
No, not really. Meg's the best. She's the funniest. She's the funniest lady ever.
I can't wait
to meet her in the
She told me like when she was on your show recently, she said she was calling from on top of a telephone pole outside of her house.
Oh yeah.
And she told me to tell you that, you know, she couldn't get access to that tonight, so that's why she can't call in. So
there's like coyotes or something circling the telephone pole. She's out in the middle of the desert.
So anyway, regards from Meg, but so, anyway, I'm sorry to hear that Ray couldn't make it tonight. She injured her back, I guess. We've all been there, I think.
Oh yeah, I think I'm good for completely fucking my back up once a year. I lay in like a pool of my own slime, calling for help until someone is merciful enough to come along and drag me out of the room. But
Gotta take care of those things, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What would you like to
talk about tonight?
Well, I would like to talk about a few things, actually. I want to talk to you about art, because I know you're into that. I know you're a fine writer. I'm very pleased to see your cool flash fiction stuff when it pops up. It's cool shit. I love it. But
well, thank you.
I like that you're doing other stuff too. That you're not bogged down in one thing. That you're doing the art. And I wanted to get you to retell an anecdote you told me. I don't know if you will. That there was that anecdote you told me about when you were, I think you were in college or some shit, and you met somebody's famous quarterback's brother or some shit, and he was.
The quarterback, his name is Hasselbeck, and he was with the Seahawks for a number of years, and he's still out there playing in the NFL, and I think he's with the Ravens now, but I'm not positive, but he's kind of playing the role of the, you know, veteran quarterback bringing up younger quarterback. But I saw his name in the playoffs. I saw it on a jersey. So his father is named Don Hasselbeck. And Don and I went to school together. We studied art together at the University of Colorado.
Uh-huh.
And that year, this was in the mid-70s, and that year University of Colorado football team was still in the Big Eight, and they won the Big Eight and went to the Orange Bowl. So these guys were the real deal. And he was an All-American, Don, Hasselbeck's father, Don, my friend, was an All-American tight end. Big man.
Yeah.
I mean, must have been 6'7", or 8", 250, 270, you know, just a big guy. And dominated that league and actually went on to become an all-pro NFL player, as a matter of fact. But he was in a number of my classes. And in those days, it was not really common in the late 60s and early 70s in my high school or the, you know, universities that I attended for, you know, you were either a jock or a freak. You weren't an artist and a jock, generally speaking. It just didn't happen that much. So Don did these amazing, you know, watercolor paintings. He was in my ceramics class. He would throw pots on the wheel, you know, really, really good. He was really good at all of this, all of fine arts. You know, he was a very talented guy. So he was hanging this show in a water media gallery, and he's towering over me, and he's hanging these kind of delicate little watercolors up. And I'm like, wow, Don, you ever get any shit from, and I named some of the players, you know, who played with him, you know, for being like, you know, such a, like, you know, for being like a wussy artist. And he looked down at me and he goes, so what if they did? So I was like, yeah, good point. You know, you can do anything you want. No one's going to, you know, call you on it. So, but it was really, really funny. It was really a revelation. And it was also, for me, I think of it often even to this day because, you know, it took guts for him to do that, as big as he was. and powerful
yeah, yeah.
as he was, still the social thing was there. So, you know, I think whenever anybody has the courage to put themselves out there like that, just be who the hell they are. And especially,
yeah.
you know, when you're making art and writing and making art, there's a vulnerability there, you know?
Yeah.
And I respect the fact that he had the courage to do that, you know? So I think of that often when I encounter people in what we do in making art or whether it be writing or playing music or the visual arts or whatever, is that you've got to be willing to, you know, be rejected now and not worry so much about what other people think of you. You know, easier said than done, but, you know, good lesson there.
I think, there's a huge point in that that echoes all over the place, you know. But what I kind of get out of that all is, like, you know, like you say, everyone has to be, they got to really put themselves out there to be creative, and so many people are, like, held back just by the idea of rejection and all that. But once you start actually doing it, once you start putting your work out there, as long as you're reflecting things in the world that are true in some way, that are the absolute truth that you know, there's no way that you're not going to be able to defend your work. That you can always defend your work. You can always defend the shit you're putting out. But, you know, if it's something you don't really believe in, then you shouldn't be doing it anyway.
Right.
So, yeah.
If it's not authentic. Yeah. Authentic and honest,
yeah,
I think you've hit the nail there.
I'd like to see a 6'8", 300-pound man sitting in a MFA critique circle, you know, when he starts reading his short story, and it's you know,
yeah.
it's really fucking horrible, and everybody, you know, and then, you know, it's the little guy sitting next to him's turn to give him his notes on the story. Dolly Green Giant, I love that story. Don't fuck me up, you know. Whatever
exactly.
I have to do, spare me. I think there's a lack sometimes in big beefy badasses who are writing poems about flowers and painting watercolors. You know, bring them back. Get those guys in the WWF some paintbrushes. All right.
Well, right there you go. Just sort of like the public works. I thought you were talking about the WPA for a second. Yeah, the WWF. Right.
Oh my God! I would love to do a Kickstarter, raise some money, and have an art show. I'm gonna curate some paintings by, you know, guys from the WWF or whatever the fuck it's called now, who are tough
right.
enough to paint about the ring now. Okay, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of some people have ideas about what is appropriate for certain. Roles that they may play or the image they want to project and stuff. So,
yeah. Well, speaking of image to project, which I think is something everybody does, whether they want to or not, everybody
yeah.
has their footprint, has their own thing that they do. And I'd love to pry some reading out of you. Would you read something for us?
Sure, I'd love to. I have some pieces here. Actually, I'd like to take a second here, if I may, to thank a few people, too, have taken a chance and, you know, published my work, and it's been really supportive. And, you know, amongst those people, right at the top of the list are Robert Vaughn and Meg Tewitt, who have become close friends of mine. And along with them, Amanda Dio, Christopher Allen, Josh Goller, and Matt Potter. Michelle Elvey and Jesse Alvarez are people that Chris Talbot Heindel, they all come to mind. I mean, there's lots more, but, you know, I tend to remember them for, like, you know, giving me a chance and helping welcome me to the writing community. It's an internet community in a large part, and it's really cool. So I feel like an opportunity to give them a shout-out. And now I'd like to read a list of 200 people who have rejected me. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, you read them, dude. Alphabetical order. Give me some addresses.
Actually, I'd like to read here, if you have time for three short pieces. That would be cool. And I would love to read a piece first up that was published in December, just last month, by the Bitch and Kitch, and the editor is Chris Talbot Heindel, and they're out of Wisconsin, which is where I grew up. And coincidentally enough, I think that's where Ryder lives in Milwaukee, where I grew up. So that's kind of funny, and so does Robert. But this piece is called Short Fuse, and it's a piece of flash fiction. Short Fuse. He flips through channels looking for anything worth watching. Someone said a person's lifespan is shortened by 22 minutes for every hour of television watched. He should have been dead 10 years ago. Eyes glazed over, he gazed at flickering images, a kaleidoscope of catastrophe, pestilence, economic collapse, religious extremists, suicide bombers, civil war, revolution, record-breaking drought, floods, global warming, earthquakes, hurricanes, and a wildfire out of control in Colorado. The bitter taste of bile fizzles in his throat. He finds a movie about Vikings with flaming torches pitted against ferocious werewolves. The Vikings have Australian accents. The werewolves clearly actors dressed up in ridiculous wolf suits. A commercial advertises a remake of Towering Inferno. Abruptly, he turns it off, jumps in the car, and heads for Walmart. He turns on the radio, nothing but bad news. He comes up behind a Dodge Caravan with a sign in the window that reads, Baby on Board. It annoys him. He takes it personally. Like anyone without a baby on board is a deranged, meth-addled, demolition derby jockey. Is it to remind him to stop driving fast and taking chances, or to interrupt the text message he must surely be composing? Will it be the tipping point in his decision not to push the pedal to the floor, sideswipe their vehicle, and force it off the side of the road at 60 miles per hour? He sees the bumper sticker, I brake for unicorns, and his face burns with aggravation. Temples pulsating and hands clammy on the steering wheel, he shifts over to the passing lane, guns the engine, and gives the van wide berth. He stops for gas and wonders what it would feel like to rob a convenience store. Still contemplating that question, he scans the headlines of the tabloids as he waits to pay. Dog accidentally shoots man with his own gun. Elvis's hidden extraterrestrial daughter. Swedish man bursts into flames on train platform. Damn it, I could make better headlines than that. His eyelid twitches. The smell of burnt gas station roller dogs is nauseating. Sweating like a stevedore, he pays and gets back in the car. Walmart is where style goes to die. There's a man in sporting goods with a mullet haircut and a tattoo that says, Do it in the dirt. He's seen that guy at the dirt track races. The man's trying out baseball bats. His mind, a screeching smoke alarm, he realizes what he must do. He grabs a bat and heads over to electronics, his senses assailed by images on 27 televisions. Breakdancing, burning buildings, cooking shows, Judge Judy, an oil spill, another school shooting. He can already picture the headline. Man walks into Walmart, smashes 27 widescreen televisions with baseball bat. He likes the way that sounds. The bat feels almost too hot to hold in his hand as he strolls over to a widescreen flickering with the image of a raging fire and starts swinging. That's Short Fuse.
Well, that's something else. I want to do that too. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my wife on a date this Saturday night, and we're going to do all that. It's going to be great.
Okay, I'll be watching the headlines of the New York City papers.
Oh, it's going to be, it won't make New York City papers, something like that, but it would make the papers in Tom River where I'm going. That's for sure.
Oh, you're going to New Jersey. That's right. I forgot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love New Jersey. It's, I'm there every day. Almost.
Well, yeah. Certainly your novel Toll Booth was a slice of Jersey in many ways, I thought.
Oh, my
and
God.
And other things
gonna,
as well.
It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. There's one coming out in the summertime that I think that novel really was it was about New Jersey, but it was there's a lot of different things in it, a lot of magic and nonsense, and one coming out in the summer, which is a little more.
Well, Toll Booth had the same elements, that's for sure. Lots of different things going on.
But I
want
to.
Do
talk
you want
about
me to read
stuff.
Another one?
I do. I definitely want you to read another one.
All right, so this one was actually, I'm very grateful for this. This one was, like, recognized as the winning entry in the Flash Mob 2013, and expression of gratitude to everyone who was involved in that. And I've got a bunch of people as because I won that first place, they sent me their books that came out in 2013, which a total embarrassment of riches. I still haven't gotten through even half of them. I mean, they're just was fantastic.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
And thanks to Christopher Allen for publishing this in Medizin. So this is called Funky Little Blaze Orange Pork Pie Hat. And this was written after I drove from my house to town on the opening day of deer season, rifle season. Funky Little Blaze Orange Pork Pie Hat. Driving into town, daydreaming about the dream I had last night. Not the one about my father, but the one about designing a line of menswear made exclusively from potato skins, with snappy names like Duds from Spuds, Potato Pants and Tater Tees. I pass fluttery paper cornstalks, vineyards rusting under sullen skies, pickup trucks clustered at trailheads, and men with shotguns creeping toward cornfields. Walt Whitman's redneck body double is in the diner, writing on a napkin at the counter. Could be a shopping list, directions to his hunting camp, or a brand new collection of radiant poems. Seems like I'm the only one in the place not wearing green and beige camo and a funky little blaze orange pork pie hat. Where the hell are the fashion police when you need them? A man and a teenage girl stand at the counter. Their hands are covered with blood. The girl shows off a photo she just shot with her phone of the buck she just shot with her gun. Walt Whitman says, "That's a big deer, sweetheart. How old are you, anyway?" 15, but my dad lets me drive his pickup. She leaves to wash her hands. In the grocery store, I spot a man in the produce department squeezing bananas. With his meticulously groomed white goatee and wire-rimmed glasses, he's a dead ringer for Sigmund Freud. I want to tell him about the dream I had last night, not the one about my father, but the one about Henrietta swimming through a sea of roses. I want to say, "Doctor, would you mind if I lie down on your couch over here by the tomatoes for just a few minutes? I need to tell you about my mother." That's it.
Yeah, that was something else. That that whole flash mob thing was great. That was a lot of fun when that was going on. I remember that. I remember that happened. And that's how I first heard your name. Sent you a message and said hello. I was reading your piece in that. It was really great. And I'm glad that you came on and read that.
It's funny because I never had sent that piece out because I thought it was too strange. And every word in it is absolutely true. I literally did have a dream about designing a line of menswear from potato skins. And I woke up with that on my mind. Duds from Spuds and Tater Tees, just crazy. And then I went to the store and saw all that stuff, and every word of it's basically true, except I didn't lie down on the couch by the tomatoes, but the whole thing was true. So I hadn't sent it in because I just thought it was too weird. And I thought, well, what the fuck? You know, Flash Mob 2013, I'm just going to throw a spitball here and send in my weirdest story. And I didn't give it another thought, really. I just sent it in to be part of the whole event, basically. And there's a lesson in, you know, just letting it all hang out. And if it seems weird, maybe you should send something in, you know, and not worry about it. So
very cool,
interesting man. There too.
Yeah. So what do you got going on with any what kind of projects are you working on? What are you working towards? Anything you want to mention?
Yeah,
something?
I've got a bunch of different stuff happening. I'm doing some, you know, like still balancing a little work in education, mm-hmm. you know, public school education, balancing that with this writer's life, but it's in a good way that I can. The projects I'm working on, I've got two chapbooks floating out there looking for a home. One's a flash fiction chapbook called American Idol, spelled IDYLL, Ruminations on a Culture Gone Sideways. And the other is a poetry chapbook called Long Gone and Never Coming Back. So I started sending those to contests, basically, which is kind of a low percentage return for sure. You know, it's a real crapshoot.
Yeah, okay.
Large numbers, you know. But I started there. but I'm at the point now of actually looking for small press publishers who might want to take a chance on these. So I'm, you know, keeping my sending them out wherever they have open reading periods and stuff.
Yes.
There's an ongoing project I've got called the Lunch Lady Cookbook, and that's on my website. And so, you know, as you may know, I spent 25 years working in the public school system. So, my opinion, the Lunch Ladies made the best macaroni and cheese on the planet. So I started this whole thing as kind of a tongue-in-cheek send-up of cookbooks. And it has artwork, recipes, libation recommendations, and music playlists that I recommend. So, but it sort of got legs of its own, and I'm a bunch of installments into it at this point. And, you know, the real recipes that I come up with. So my concept is to do this thing as an actual book called The Lunch Lady Cookbook. So I'm working on that, and, you know, it's one of those projects I think I need to, at some point, tie up the loose ends and just get it done. As well as another one, which I started, about the same time, a serial novel, I guess, and it was a completely satirical send-up of the, you know, detective noir genre. And it's called The Last of the Hard-Boiled Dicks. And the protagonist is basically a laid-off teacher named Muggsy Fleming, spelled Phlegming, who basically decided to become a private investigator. So he's got a lot of misadventures going on there. So, and the other thing that I've really started to pay more attention to is I write essays for a part of my website called Rants and Raves, and they're basically reflections on culture and stuff like that. So I actually submitted a few of those to the book you and Chuck Howard are co-editing the anthology called Too Much. And
Too Much?
Ones that I selected are about excess in some way or another. So,
cool.
And I've actually started to send my essays out as submissions to places that are taking them. But I haven't heard anything back yet. But those are on my website. And I'm working on a body of new visual art for exhibition this year. So usually participate in two or three different art exhibits at galleries. So kind of taking things in a new direction there. And then finally just trying to write stuff that doesn't suck, that people want to read and that evoke some kind of emotional response.
There you go,
man.
That's
what I'm working on.
Yeah. Well, I'm rooting for you. I'll tell you what, it was great talking to you. We have a call. I see Ryder's on the line waiting to come on, but I think we have a call right here.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody wants to say hi. I'm just going to take a chance here. 805.
All right.
Who is this?
You're talking to me.
Anybody else there? Hello?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, who's calling?
Bud, can you hear me?
I hear you. What's up?
Claffy, how you doing, guys?
Hey, James Claffy, how you doing, man?
James Claffy,
how you doing, James?
I'm doing okay. Hey, Michael, how are you?
James, I'm good, man.
Good.
You calling all the way from Avocado Ranch?
Not quite. I'm walking down to the beach right now, but close enough.
sounds awfully nice.
Yeah,
I'm sitting here in the dead of winter in upstate New York looking at the full moon.
Boy, I tell you what, it's 80 degrees here today, and I'm just like, wait a second, where's our seasons? And then I realized, you know what, we don't get seasons in Southern California.
Right.
We have summer, rub it in a little bit, man. Yeah, we have summer, and then we have not summer, and that's about it. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, like New Hampshire has 10 months of winter and 2 months of rough sledding. That's what they're
exactly. I don't think I'll swap though. No thanks. Yeah, I can't believe.
So I'm sorry you can't go to AWP, but you're like teaching high school, man. That's like a. But you know the thing that you're doing is great.
I'm back in the trenches, up to my.
Yeah, well, I was a full-time public school practitioner for almost a quarter of a century. So, you know, I think I've paid my debt to society.
you've more than paid your debt to society. I've gone back in to start repaying my debt again.
Karma, man. Pay back the bitch.
I tell you, I forgot how much of a drain on your resources and energy it was. Oh my God! I'm like, how am I going?
It's an intense thing. It really is. It's all consuming.
Yeah. How am I going to write anything ever again?
You got good stuff gestating at this point. Just think of it that way.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got Matt Potter at Pure Slush looking for a year in stories for me, and I'm like, yeah, good luck.
He's a good editor, though.
He is a good editor. He's great, but I'm thinking, when am I going to get him the next six stories? Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know. You might have to steal him from your students' essays.
Hey, there you go, yeah. That might frighten him, my God. I can't believe how busy you are with all that stuff. How do you do it?
I'm just trying to stay out of trouble, man.
Hey, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. I'm bored.
I love your writing. You have the tone of an Irish poet.
Yeah. Oh man.
I want to give you some props here, man. Fantastic stuff.
What's that, bud?
James, I want to give you some props, man. I got your book in my hand right here. If everybody is listening, if you're not sure who's calling in right now, this is James Claffey, and he's a really, you know, not to turn James Pink here, but he's a great writer, and he's got this awesome book out recently from Press 53 called Blood of Cold Blue, and I pick it up sometimes. It's in my chair next to my record player, and I'm about halfway through it, and I'm loving it, man. It's a great book. Props to you.
Yeah, fantastic writing, guys.
I hope you're listening.
Buy that book, people.
Music.
Buy it now.
Yeah, please do. Please do. I tell you, you know how it is. I mean, you guys know it's one copy at a time.
Oh yeah.
It's the exact same as teaching high school. You know, you save one student at a time and you sell one book at a time. It's like there's a direct link there.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely.
I wish I was going to AWP, guys. I really do. Maybe next year I can finagle.
We'll look forward to that and try to get you in some trouble if you do.
Yeah, I think it's going to be in Los Angeles soon.
That's what I just told Matt Rocky today.
Yeah.
Well, I'll definitely be able to go to that one. It's down the road.
Yeah, and we'll all stay at your house. That'll be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's only a short commute to L.A. Yeah, enjoy the traffic. And Bud has a new book coming out in the summer. He's prolific.
I know.
Yeah, I love
Totally Madman. I don't know how he does it.
I love Toll Booth. I tell you, that's a funny book. My God.
Hey, thanks, man. It definitely was. It's funny. That shit's funny. You know, I was in stitches.
At different parts of that, I was, like, laughing out loud, and my wife was looking at me, what are you laughing at?
It should be a movie, I think.
Yeah, you know what? It would be a great movie. It would.
Yeah. I love
that subculture, the way you get into that subculture, and it's so great.
Thanks, man.
Powerful
Thanks a lot,
stuff,
man.
Man. Powerful stuff.
I'm glad to hear you liked it. Well, guys, you want to say hi to Ryder Collins, and you guys can say hi to her, and then I'm gonna do an interview with her.
And then I'll say hi, and then I'll gracefully bow out.
I'll say hi too and bail because I'm pushing the toddler here, walking the dog, so it's hard going.
Yeah. You're doing good stuff. Thanks for calling.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. And congrats.
James.
All right,
so right now I just pulled Ryder Collins off the switchboard. Ryder, you're live right now. You want to say hi to these fine fellows here, Michael Maxwell and James Claffey?
Hey, Michael. Hey, James.
Hi there.
Hi, Ryder.
Are you guys all
Michael,
buddies?
Ryder, me and Stitches last night asking for a highball.
I just figured out that Michael went to my high school.
Oh, my God.
No way. I went to your high school? Did you go to Whitefish Bay Rider?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. When did you graduate?
Do I have to say that out loud?
Well, my God, this is, I mean, world, this small world, but this is nuts.
Uh-huh, that's, I mean, what were, I was, you close?
Were you close at all in terms of years, or are you like a generation or two behind me?
I don't know. What year did you graduate?
1968, but I had three younger brothers who went through also.
Wow. Thanks. Oh, my God.
That's crazy.
Isn't it?
Jesus. Oh, my God. My world. And if I had, if we had time, I would tell you another story about that that's just as nuts. But I really need to, we'll have to chat more about this on Facebook or something. And I want to, you know, gracefully bow out and give you the floor. That's bad at this point. And if that seems appropriate to you guys.
Well, I'm going back out, and I'm going to listen to the rest of it offline. So you guys have a great chat, and Bud, I'll talk to you in a few weeks, probably, right?
Oh my God, definitely, we'll be talking, man.
Yeah, well, I don't remember what date it was, but yeah, we'll I'll make sure I have it on the calendar.
Hey, you know what? The fourth of February, James, and please call him whenever you want, man. It's always a pleasure to hear from
okay.
you. Next, well, we'll have a nice interview
of February,
on the fourth.
Right,
that's
pretty
cool, James. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, Michael, take care. You all have a fun time, okay?
Yeah, man.
All right.
Bye, James.
Bye, brother.
Bye.
Bye.
So I'm bowing out, Bud and Ryder. I'll listen to you guys. Have a good time. Thank you for everything. I can't believe we went to the same high school. That's crazy. Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye. Bye, Mike. Fucking, yo, Ryder, what's up?
Hey.
How you doing?
Bud, how are you doing?
How you doing over there? I'm doing very good. I'm doing very good over here. I'm actually looking at your book right now, and I'm sitting in my chair by the record player, and I got Homegirl in my hand, which was a really great book. I'm sure we'll be talking about that in depth, but I just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you.
I first met you in person. Actually, I only met you in person once. I was in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
Down there with Frankie Metro and Michelle McDonald and all those fine fellows, Brian Fusion. So how you been doing since then? I think that was almost, a year and a half ago or something. How you been doing?
Yeah. Good. I went down to Albuquerque in November, last November.
Yes.
So we missed you guys. We missed you and Ray.
We just got married, you know. We got married in May.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was great. We've been holed up, you know. We've been just, enjoying New York City and just, you know, being married, walking around. You know, you can't leave New York City when you just got married, you know. It's like an unwritten rule. You gotta keep going to the East Village and getting drunk all the time and eating in little Italian restaurants and just... It's great, especially when it's snowing.
We missed you, but it was nice. It was nice to see Frankie and Lindsay, everyone, and Dustin. Have you met Dustin?
Dustin is awesome. I haven't met him in person, but I talk to him all the time. He rings me up on the telephone sometimes. I'll just be sitting there, my phone rings, and there's little Dustin Holland, my buddy. He really is a what do you call it? When somebody's talented at a young age, like a what is that? You're a teacher, aren't you? You should know this shit.
An ingenue?
Huh?
An ingenue?
Something like that.
I think that's for a film.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah. He's a talented guy, great guy. But anyway, I want to talk about your stuff. I want to talk about what you got going on.
All right.
What's the deal these days? What are you? Are you back to teaching? Teaching college?
I'm teaching adjunct. Adjuncting.
Cool.
Because I got free from the Alabamas, and that was kind of the compromise. so I'm just teaching part-time. I'm writing more, which is good.
What are you writing these days? What are you working on?
I'm working on a bunch of projects. I'm working on a series of poems right now, kind of loosely based on Rapunzel, but not like in an Anne Sexton kind of way.
Sure.
And then I am also working on two novels, and I'm kind of letting them fight it out to the death in my subconscious right now. And whoever loses more teeth is going to win.
Nice. That's the best way.
Yeah, I think so.
So you had a couple of years ago, is it like 2 years already? I can't, you know, time slips away. 2 years ago, Homegirl came out. And it's Honest Publishing. I think, are they in England or something?
Yeah, they're in England.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So
if I had a book if I had a book published in England, I would just bars and bus stops and hospitals and just tell everybody, I'm fucking big in England, suck it, you know, that's what I would say. It doesn't work the same way when, you know, I'm happy and everything, but when they publish your book in New Jersey, you can't walk around, you know, and be like, yo, I'm fucking huge in New Jersey.
Yeah, you can. I'm close to Jersey, yo.
I'm huge in Jersey. So that's really cool. You got this Rapunzel thing going on, and this the two new novels. I get the sense that you're the type of person who kind of like, you seem to write like it's a war. You know, like you have, like, when I was reading Homegirl, it was just this great visceral just text that just was raw and beautiful and really, really like enchanting in a way too. And I'm excited to read another novel, another one of your novels. Can you tell me about, I know you said you got two of them at war with each other here. What's the, pick one of them and give me the premise. I want a vision of the future. What's it about?
March of the Daughters is the one that I think is winning, and it is going to be really gross.
Nice. So, like how gross?
Yeah.
In what way?
Like, just gross, bodily, gross, scatological. Like, Homegirl is full of sex, you know, because I was living in the South, and I was really repressed. The culture down there, deep South, is just repressive, and that was my only way to keep my sanity. But now I'm free, so I can...
You can write about
the kids. Puke and bodies, big bodies hanging, and just horrible things being done to them. I just have these visions, you know, and so I'm writing them, not to sound like a crazy serial killer or anything, but...
Fuck it. What's wrong with today's society that you can't aspire to be a serial killer, you know? Fuck it. Just go for it. Just go for it.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest thing
is...
I like
being so much... I think maybe
the biggest thing would be the biggest thing about being a serial killer is just figuring out what kind of people you want to butcher. You know, you can pretty much make a little pie chart and decide who you think is the biggest drain on society in your own warped head, and then there you go, Ryder, start killing, have fun.
Yeah, but surprisingly, there's not going to be any killing in my book, I don't think. So maybe the villain might die. I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
He's bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like The Stranger Comes to Town, you know, that kind of story. And then shit gets fucked up in a big way.
Fantastic. So now you moved out of the South. You're from Minneapolis originally? It's the same thing. Minnesota and Milwaukee. It's all the same thing.
Not the same thing at all. We got
Listen, I got this giant map. I got this giant map above my desk, and all in the center of the country, it starts up at the Great Lakes, it goes down to Texas, and it just says Milwaukee or Minnesota. What was the biggest difference from there to where you lived in the South?
The biggest difference?
Don't say that.
No, well, fuck that. I almost want to go back to Alabama because of this winter, but I'm not. Yeah. I don't want to talk about that. But I think it's just that here people can be who they want to be, and in the South people hide that and do it behind closed doors and pretend like who they really are don't exist.
Yeah, you think, really it's like strange how that is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about all the South. I'm talking about, like, the deep South pockets where it's God and football. And that's about the only thing that gets talked about, and it's kind of a lesson in conformity.
Both of those things suck, God and football, both of them. they both are miserable, stupid things.
They are miserable. Lots of people love football, lots of people love God, so for now we're pissing everyone off.
Yeah. Oh no. Football can be good. Football can be good if I'm like just the right kind of drunk, and it's like a Saturday and it's a college game. It can be all right. You know, I can deal with that. But yeah, this whole Sunday in front of the television thing,
mm-hmm.
I'm not into that. Now we can yammer on and on and on about things that are completely unrelated to what I want to get down to the point of here. I wanted to see if I can get you to read some stuff. Are you willing, able, and ready?
I think so. What do you want me to read?
Do you have, like, I'm picturing you have, like, about 1,000 pieces of loose leaf paper in front of you. Why don't you just make a big, just move your hands all around and make this big messy pile and pick a random thing and just read it, anything.
Do you have a video camera in my room? Is that what's going on? You're like watching me. You're like,
no,
I just
described
the middle of the map.
Yeah, I just described like 99% of all writers' offices.
Yeah.
There's just loose leaf paper everywhere. Yeah,
definitely.
Read some poems if you got them. I like your poetry.
Sure.
I like seeing you read in Albuquerque.
Excellent. Thanks. And yeah, that was excellent reading with you. I think I will read a real love poem, because when we were in Albuquerque, those were not love poems that I read, so I will read one real love poem, and then maybe I'll read one of my Rapunzel poems. So this is a love poem. I will give you all the juice boxes in the world. I will make sure all the straws have pointy ends and you can plunge right in. I'll brown bag you cookies and roll you in napkins. We are talking lunches forever. I will CSA you. I will leave you greens on your doorstep. There will be salads on your steps all the way to the sidewalk, to the street, to your job, and back again. You'll parade in leaves. And there's a fox in my hen house. There's eggs to be taken. There's crayon drawings on my ovaries, and you flashlight but not gaslight. I'll give you all the farm creatures. I'll give you all the old McDonald's, all the old remixes, the techno beats and glow sticks, fixed vapor rub and poppers, the leftovers of rave culture. And that'll be our second course, and that'll be dessert. The music stream that carries you through, that takes you beyond. The crummy juice boxes with non-sucky straws, the stale cookies, the greasy bags and napkins, the eggs that have been stolen, the eggs that have gone barren, the dribbled juices, the smashed gardens, this car speeding through all the greens and fruit I want to give you. So that's a real love poem.
That's quite a love poem. That's love poem with a capital L. Like that one.
Thank you. And then this is a Rapunzel poem that I wrote. Actually, I wrote it last night. And I was looking at this picture of me from, not that I'm vain or anything. Writers are never vain, right?
Yeah.
No, from the Albuquerque reading. And when I was there, there was this little girl on the side that came and sat down right as I started reading a chapter from Homegirl. So I was she was like 4 and like staring up at me with her like little brown eyes. And I was like, oh, holy shit, how the hell am I going to read this chapter? So I kind of went for entertainment and self-censored the chapter, but not because the girl was there, but also because I like to entertain when I read, you know, and I want to make sure that my audience actually has a good time when they come to a reading. So it was kind of inspired by that picture, and it's called Reading. I want to keep the little girl in this. I want to not crop her out. But you're there waiting on Facebook edges, waiting to see the young girl, waiting to see her flinch from words that are too old, words like platinum and uranium, marriage and fidelity, rapscallions, rampions. Maybe I'm the one flinching. Maybe my father's pretending to weed. Maybe my mother's out drinking more than tea with Gothel. Maybe my sister. Maybe my sister. Maybe my sister's spelling words into her pillow. Maybe she's spelling hymen. Maybe she's spelling candle. Maybe she's spelling ways to deceive. My sister's hair is a beacon. My sister's hair is a shroud. My sister's hair is a merman. My sister's hair is flax bread. My sister's hair says nothing. My sister's hair lets you climb, lets you forget, lets you meditate on brick. The smell of your breath. The smell of your breath as you pull yourself up. The smell of your breath on brick. You ignore the smell of your breath. You think about the smell of your breath on my sister's hair. The smell of your breath as you nip her back, as you take her from behind, as her hair covers you both, and there is sweat, and there is hair, and everywhere the smell of conditioner, and you are lost forever. And my sister's hair really says things. Things like, climb on up, sweet prince, and things like, climb on in, old witch.
But, that, last line is awesome. Climb in, old witch. Oh, I like old witch. But what's the, I'm not familiar with, I mean, I know Rapunzel had long hair. Did Rapunzel, mm-hmm. was there a witch in Rapunzel, or not?
Yeah, there was a witch, like the beginning of the fairy tale, the mother's pregnant and she has these cravings that can't be satisfied, and she wants, like, radishes in one version and rampions in another, which I guess are like little garlic shoots. So the father goes into the witch's garden and steals them, and the witch comes and is like, well, because you stole these, I get your firstborn.
That sucks.
And that's Rapunzel, yeah. And she puts Rapunzel in the tower. And that's the rest of that fairy tale.
This is cool. I always dig when somebody takes takes a piece of literature, takes a piece of art, and does their own, like, almost like commentary on it, you know, taking the thing and building off of it. I don't know. I think all the ideas are already used. Of course they're all used, and it's great.
They're
going to project their own personal life onto the thing and make some beautiful new thing. It's great.
Right, and plus, all the stories have been told, and I think that we need to retell them in different ways. Not to get, like, hippie or anything, but I kind of feel like art can transform, and if we start telling the right stories, things might start happening for good instead of bad all the time. I don't know.
You're right. You drunk? I need to be drunk. I need to be drunk more. My personal goal is to
hang out at some point.
Yeah.
You and Ray and me, and we should get drunk.
Yes, that's going to be a new goal. I'm writing that down. I got a list of goals I'm attaining towards. I got a bulleted list here. That's number one on the list. Get drunk with Ryder at some time in the near future. Number one.
There we go. Well, you should get a reading out here out in Milwaukee. I mean, there are good bookstores here, and
I think
love Tollbooth. So
yeah,
you need to do it.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get out. You know, my buddy. You know, it seems like every time I do the show, Milwaukee or Robert Vaughn gets mentioned. He lives right there, and he's always fucking saying to come out there and read. And we should,
mm-hmm.
we should party.
Mm-hmm.
We should have a big party out there.
Fuck yeah, we should do it. We should talk about it on Facebook and set it up.
There we go.
Yo.
Well, you got any more poems to read? Can I get you to read one more?
One more. Let me see. Oh, my God.
You don't have to. You can tell me that you're sick and tired of fucking reading poems and you're not reading any more fucking poems. You signed up for two and you're out of here. You want one
yeah,
more
but
time,
I'm a writer, and you know, writers are all goddamn narcissists.
When somebody actually asks you to read one, it's like, holy fucking
like,
shit!
Yeah.
You want to hear something? Are you kidding me? Am I in fucking Bizarro World?
True. I think I might read that one that I read in Albuquerque.
Go for it.
The Not Love poem. I hope you get ugly and die.
Nice.
I hope you get ugly and die in parts. Well, maybe I should. I'm sorry. Now I'm being wishy-washy. Well, I'll just do it. All right. Sorry.
Go for it.
I hope you get ugly and die in parts. One, I hope you Fellini in your alleyway. I hope you Bellini in cocktail like Hemingway in the Everglades. I hope you live it up in your belly dancer's rut. I hope you rut and root in your witch's cunt like Circe swine all over the island. I hope your teeth fall out after you shoe polish one for Halloween. Oh, the irony. You as tramp and your new one in a little plaid miniskirt. Chap them like them young, too. I would never schoolgirl for you. I would never iPhone my breasts or even make kissy faces on the brown paper bag I left burning on your doorstep. I hope Fellini 9½ you. I hope my Molotov days blaze through you. Your belly dancer disappears in a poof of sequins and gauze, and your witch takes off on an ice blue Vespa. Ciao, ciao, she says, and nothing more. Two. There is no witch, there is a Vespa, there is no Halloween, there is no teeth, no baby teeth, no adult teeth, no fox teeth, no mice. There is no bus and there is no love. There are hipsters and you hang with them. You grow a mustache. You are mustachioed. You say chow, chow. You ride that scooter through my hood slowly so I can see your new girl. And she's got a sundress on and it is dusk and I can count her bones and I do skidoo. And her bones burst through like rainbows and unicorns. And her dress is twee and she is twee and her eyes are big and she is never hungry. Three. Even if there were no new miniskirt girl, you would have left. No witch and no belly dancer. You were always packing that folding city up, then taking it out, looking at it, shaking it a bit. So I would teeter in my platforms, on my platform, in the shop window where you left me, like a mannequin, and all the ducks and all the street corners and all the tourists and even the stop-and-go light side to see you. Four. So folding city tilt down, man, I now know what juke means, and I hope you get ugly, then die, then get all decomposy, and the worms will think you're ugly as they crawl through your mustache hairs as they unwax your handlebar, and you are all au naturel, under the earth, smothered until I can no longer hear the chow-chow. I no longer heart the chow-chow. I no longer seek a man with a city in his hands. I no longer look for the you who will leave again. That's it. For the not love poem,
you know, yeah, it is. It is a love poem. It's, you know, it's you know, everybody's got that person they hope gets ugly and dies. They're out there.
That's true. That is true.
And the great thing about life is most of the time it's happening. They're getting uglier every day. They're dying more and more every day. And our wishes are coming true.
Ah, oh, I want to quote that. I'm going to totally quote you with that. Put that in,
yeah,
as an epigraph. Definitely.
Yeah, man. They're getting uglier. So,
that's true.
Hey, this has been man, a hell of a lot of fun, you know.
Definitely.
Playtime is drawing to a close. I gotta go. Actually, I believe it or not, I have a steak to cook. How American is
excellent.
That? I have a steak.
I hope you got some fries with that.
Yeah, I don't have any fries. I feel really patriotic. I'm going to go cook a steak. I'm supporting all the beef farmers of America tonight. hey, listen.
Now you're just
kind of
get under my skin.
Yeah, I know. This has been too much fun. This should be illegal.
Yep.
I want to, you know, I'm going to make you come back on the show soon. So
definitely, we will talk about your new novel, too.
Yes,
I am in the midst of reading, so it is awesome. And do email me about coming to Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, we will come to Milwaukee. I'll bring all the all the other the 15 people that are listening. Come with us. We're going to go to Milwaukee,
yes.
All of us.
We will have a
big voyage.
Party.
If you're listening to
Milwaukee.
This posthumously on an iPad, reach out and we'll go to Milwaukee together.
The Odyssey to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Ryder Collins. Right. Well, thank you for talking to me, and I'm really psyched to see that you went to fucking high school with Michael Maxwell. Doesn't get no better than that.
Yeah, that was so weird.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah. Keep it real. Keep writing, and I'll talk to you very soon.
All right. Bye, bud.
And this is pretty much how the show ends.
pretty sober. It's a strange way to be. I want to thank the guests that came on tonight, Michael Gillen Maxwell, and he is calling. He was calling from the Finger Lakes, upstate New York, which pretty awesome up there. And I want to thank him for coming on and reading. He read some really great stuff. Submit to JMWW, and Michael will accept it or reject it, however he's feeling. Also, I want to thank James Claffey for calling in, the coolest Irishman on the West Coast. He's got to be. And, of course, I want to thank Ryder Collins, who's she's a badass. She always calls herself Mama. You see Ryder read live in person, she refers to herself as Mama a lot. And that's cool. I wish more of you girls out there would start calling yourself things like Mama. Some variation of it. It's just cool. Do that. But yeah, thanks for listening and all that stuff. I hope you'll make the decision in the future one day to keep listening. I'm always looking for guests, you know. I talked to a lot of people on here, and if you got some kind of project you want to promote, something you want to get some exposure to, some kind of artistic endeavor, I'd love to hear from you. Reach out. You can hit me up through the Facebook page for The Unknown Show with Bud Smith. You can find me on Twitter. All I use Twitter for is saying really stupid shit. Stupid shit that will ensure I can never be the mayor of any small town anywhere. Or you can even find me on my website, BudSmithWrites.com, which is a very stupid name, but it's the best I can come up with. So yeah, so thanks again. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the rest of your night. Don't you hear?